Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Your Leifseth Olsom won the 2018 Iditarod earlier this morning. Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove reports.
The 31-year-old Olsom pulled under Nome's Burled Arch at 3 a.m. this morning to claim first place in Iditarod 46. This is only Olsom's sixth Iditarod, and he has finished in the top seven in every attempt at the last great race. Olsom's win makes him the first Norwegian musher to win the 1,000-mile sled dog race since Robert Sorley in 2005. Olsom's 2018 championship comes after an upset on Monday when Nicholas Petit, then in the lead, took a wrong turn down a stretch of trail on the Bering Sea coast between Shaktulik and Koyuk. The mistake ultimately cost him about an hour and a half to get back on course, and it allowed Olsom to take the lead, which he maintained for the remainder of the 200-plus miles to Nome. In Nome, Olsom said he didn't know how close Petit was to him earlier outside of Koyuk.
When I left Koyuk, he was sleeping or pretending to be sleeping, so I had no idea he was coming out right behind me there.
Reflecting at the finish, Olsom pointed back to brutal winds and fresh snow that slowed dog teams on the Yukon River.
It was a slow trail, a soft trail, we had wind, and it was just every leg was more challenging than the other, I felt like.
Olsom's rise to Iditarod champion has been swift since his 2013 rookie run. He took 7th place and Rookie of the Year in his first Iditarod. Olsom finished 4th in 2014, 6th in 2015, 6th again in 2016, and 4th in 2017. Winning his first Iditarod championship, Olsom brought 8 dogs to Nome. He'll receive a check for at least $50,000 from a $500,000 purse and a new truck. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
Nicholas Petit and last year's Iditarod champ Mitch Seavey arrived in Nome in 2nd and 3rd place, respectively, this morning. 2018 Yukon Quest champion Alan Moore of Two Rivers has scratched from the Iditarod in Kaltag. According to a Facebook post by kennel staff, Moore is suffering from an infection. Interior tribes are seeking federal assistance to boost law enforcement in rural communities. Speaking at the Tanana Chiefs annual convention in Fairbanks yesterday, TCC Vice President and Tanana Tribal Council member Julie Roberts Hyslip cited a lack of state troopers and village public safety officers and asked Alaska U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan for help.
We need to find a way for the federal government to come in to help us fix this problem. We need more expanded authority within our tribal governments to make sure that our tribal courts can have a say in how we treat our people and our villages. And so we're asking you today to help us to find a fix.
Robert Hyslip noted that the state has jurisdiction on tribal lands, but speaking via video conference, Senator Sullivan encouraged brainstorming on what the federal government can do. Sullivan pledged to bring the situation to the attention of U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
I'm very confident I could set up a meeting with you, the leadership here, and the Attorney General of the United States, where we get him in a room with us and say, hey, here are our problems. Here are our problems. How can you help us and educate him?
The jurisdictional issue aside, in her own video conference comments, Senator Lisa Murkowski noted that the Tribal Law and Order Act allows tribes to seek grants to support otherwise state-funded VPSO positions.
But also to be able to hire tribal police officers, whichever fits best with your approach.
Murkowski says the grants can also be used to buy policing equipment. More than 60 homes affected by groundwater contamination around Fairbanks International Airport will be hooked up to utility water service this summer. Many homeowners and others who showed up at a public meeting last night say they still have a lot of questions about the project and the contamination. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Representatives of an engineering firm hired by Fairbanks International say residents of a neighborhood west of the airport and east of the Chena River will have to put up with a lot of construction work this summer while contractors lay pipe to bring in drinking water.
Definitely there'll be traffic control, but everybody will still be able to access their property.
Reggie Dallaire with PDC Engineers says the project calls for installation of 1.5 miles of main water line to tie into College Utilities' existing system, along with more than 2 miles of smaller service lines that'll bring water from the main into at least 63 homes in the area, where groundwater sampling shows extensive contamination by chemical compounds that were used at the airport.
Now, it may be temporary access might have to be provided, or they may not be able to pull into their driveway, but if they are able to park on the other side and then given a footbridge over an open trench or whatever.
Some in the room full of residents who showed up for the second meeting on the airport's response to the contamination said they're glad the state-owned airport will be paying the bill to connect their homes to the college utilities system. Gene Newman says it would cost him about $33,000 for the 400 feet of pipe needed to connect his home, but he, like many at the meeting, still has a lot of questions about the project.
We don't know yet if we're still going to be able to use our existing wells, because I got a water lawn and don't know if I'll even be able to garden yet.
Newman says a test of his well water showed it contained more than 250 parts per trillion of perfluoroalkyl substances, which are chemical compounds known by the acronym PFAS. Not much is known about PFAS, but the Federal Environmental Protection Agency says long-term exposure to more than 70 parts per trillion will harm human health. Newman says he's already taking medications for some of the health problems that experts believe PFAS can bring on.
I mean, I'm on blood pressure medicine, I'm on cholesterol medicine, and I got thyroid medicine. Now, I just assumed it was hereditary, but maybe it's not.
Airport manager Jeff Roach says he and his staff have been trying to address those kinds of concerns ever since they learned in October that PFAS from firefighting foam used in its aircraft rescue and firefighting training areas had infiltrated the area's groundwater. Similar contamination has been found around Eielson Air Force Base and Fort Wainwright.
We're looking at taking care of the public. We want to provide as much information as we can about what the plans are and keep them informed about what they can do to prepare for the upcoming projects that we're working on.
Roach says the airport has provided bottled drinking water to residents of the affected area and is now planning the water system expansion. And while that work is underway, specialists with R&M Consultants will study the size of the contamination and its movement toward the Chena River. They'll report their findings in the fall and propose long-term monitoring and mitigation strategies. But Robert Burgess, the State Department of Environmental Conservation's project manager, couldn't say much about when or how the contamination could be cleaned up.
So far, there aren't very many remedial methods available for groundwater that are practicable.
Burgess says it'll likely take years for any cleanup of the contamination to begin. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has released a timeline for studying the environmental impacts of the Alaska LNG project. The Alaska Energy Desk reports that FERC announced yesterday it plans to release a draft of the environmental impact statement in 1 year. If they stick to that schedule, the agency could authorize the project as early as March 2020. The state was hoping to get through that permitting process and begin construction next year. But Alaska Gasline Development Corporation President Keith Meyer says the corporation can still bring the project online by 2025.
We're just happy that it's a schedule that we can work with, we can live with, and that does not adversely impact the project. So we're pretty excited about it. Today was a big day for us here.
Not everyone's excited about an environmental review with such a quick turnaround. Aaron Whalen, an attorney with Earth Justice, says the environmental review timeline needs to be scaled to the project.
And this is a huge project. It's going to affect tons of communities across Alaska, and you know, getting input from communities in Alaska takes time. In any community, it takes time, but in Alaska in particular, it's tricky to ensure that people have been fully heard on a project.
Valdez Mayor Ruth Knight sent the Federal Commission a letter yesterday saying that there should be further study of wetlands impacts. The Federal Commission has already ordered that the state corporation study Valdez and the Matanuska-Susitna Borough as potential alternative sites for the $45 billion project. I'm Dan Bross.